Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
So today we're getting into conspiracy a little bit, and we're going to talk about Bill Cooper, or William Cooper, some people know him. He used to do a lot of shortwave radio. Okay, so joining us today is Mark J.
The smears and distortions start immediately.
That's right. That's right. We got to get this disinformation stopped.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. That's true.
That's everywhere. That's your CIA name.
Yeah. That's true. That's my government name. But my real name is Mark Dickinson.
Yeah.
No, you know, saying. I mean, I just feel like, you know, everybody calls everybody all kinds of things, and then you feel like, well, if I'm a member of the CIA, where's my paycheck, you know? That's why I'm not getting paid. So, in any event, I wrote a book called Behold a Pale Horse Rider, Behold a Pale Horse, first book, the only book he ever wrote. And it's a book that was published in 1991, with a press run of 3,500, 500 in paperback, no, 500 hardcover, 3,000 paperback. It has now sold over 300,000 copies, which is a kind of astounding amount of copies for a book like that to sell.
Yeah.
It also became, this is not even counting, that's a very small portion of the audience of this book, considering it became the most read book in the prison systems, certainly east of the Mississippi River. And other things that cut into the sales numbers of Behold the Pale Horse is that it's, for at least 20 years, it was the number one most stolen, shoplifted book in Barnes and Nobles.
Oh, wow. What a distinction.
And,
huh?
And you still, to this day, you cannot buy it on the shelf. You have to go to the cashier, and he has it behind the counter, and he will give you a copy. Because as I asked one of these guys, he said, well, that book's got a habit of walking out all by itself. So, you know, it's a unique work, Behold the Pale Horse. I think that anybody that is familiar with it knows that, for good or ill.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Oh, that's sort of like Listerine up in the Seattle area. You got to ask for it. It's behind the counter now.
Listerine is behind the counter?
Yeah, because too many people are drinking it, so they put it behind the counter here.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, you have to ask for it.
Can't you just go to a liquor store and get booze if you feel like you want to get drunk? Why would you drink Listerine?
Yeah, but it doesn't leave you minty fresh, though.
I only report the news. I don't live it.
Well, God bless you. And Sudafed is still behind the counter, I think.
Yeah, well.
Because people are making crack out of them or what, I don't know, methamphetamine.
You can't win.
It's sort of like the slightly better than Walter White version, you know. So.
What made you write this about Cooper? Like, what drew you to him?
I don't know what generation you guys are from, but I'm 70 years old. So, you know, we grew up with all this stuff about the Kennedy assassination and stuff like that, and people getting assassinated every couple of weeks, you know. And there was a lot of stuff around in the air about, well, who really did all this stuff, you know? I mean, yeah, the Kennedy assassination is the crime of the century. I don't think anybody would really dispute that it's the crime of the century. Here, the president, not only just any president, but the president that's carrying the hopes and dreams of the American Republic, this young, beautiful guy with his fabulous-looking wife, and he gets shot right in full view of everybody, like thousands of people are standing there, and somehow nobody can figure out who did it. So, you know, and I would give you a nickel for everybody that if you walked out into Seattle right now and asked everybody you found if they believe that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, killed John Kennedy, the way it says in the Warren Commission, I don't think you'd find too many.
No.
So, you know, you're dealing with this kind of like I was born in 1948, so, you know, when I was reading the Weekly Reader in fifth grade, so like that, I mean, there wasn't anything that the government said that wasn't the truth. Nothing. You know, if the military said something, that was what it meant, you know, that people would just believe it because they just won the war and, you know, people didn't have the kind of feeling that like everybody's lying to us. So there was a bunch of things that happened, that began to change that. And I think the flying saucer business was one of the first, for sure. Because here is this thing in the sky that people are actually seeing. And they, you know, and they also had these very strong emotional responses to being abducted by these guys. And the government is telling you that it doesn't exist. So, you know, you don't want, you know, you can't really believe that. And then also, when you put that together with the Kennedy assassination, that they can't find the guy who killed him. You know, this breeds distrust. And a guy like Bill Cooper was somebody who really felt this in a very visceral way. Because he was a Vietnam soldier from a military family, totally gung-ho. You know, he goes to Vietnam, he volunteers to fight in the front lines, he's a riverboat captain, like, just like an Apocalypse Now, you know, it's the same old stuff. You know, it's like, it's hot in there, you know, and all of a sudden he begins to realize that this thing that he's supposed to be fighting for, freedom, was not really that at all. And, you know, he thinks that he's been lied to and betrayed, and his greatest ideals have been betrayed. And I think that, you know, I was looking for, I had this deep feeling that sort of started up, I don't know, sometime after 9/11, because I covered a lot of people that didn't really believe the story, the official story of 9/11. I don't say I believe in what they say either, but it was just sort of one of these kind of things. It was so widespread that I couldn't believe it. You know, it was like kind of shocking to me as somebody who grew up in the so-called Enlightenment that there were so many people that didn't believe things that I thought were just common knowledge, you know. So I began to think, like, well, they're not just all nuts because I know a lot of them and I like them. So why do they think that way? And I was trying to look for a focus for the thing, and then Bill Cooper came up. And Bill Cooper is a kind of played a weird role in my life, just kind of marginally, because you know, I met somebody who had a copy of Bill Cooper's version of the Zapruder film, which I guess I hope people remember what this is.
No, we do.
Well, you do. I mean, for people that might not, I mean, there's only one photographic record of the Kennedy assassination, which was shot by a children's clothing manufacturer named Abraham Zapruder, who just happened to be shooting at the time that Kennedy got shot. And this film was not able to be seen for years and years and years. It was purchased. This is something that most people, a lot of people don't know this, that the Time Life Company, who at that time was being run by C.D. Jackson, who was a very firm member of the OSS and CIA, took a 50-year option on this and gave Abraham Zapruder $150,000 to give him the film. So he couldn't even see it. And then, but there were bootleg copies floating around. Later on, a couple of years later, I was walking down the street in my neighborhood in Brooklyn, and I happened to run into the guy from the Wu-Tang Clan, Old Dirty Bastard. I hope everybody knows who that is. And he was reading a copy of Behold the Pale Horse, which I didn't really know much about. I only knew that it existed. So this kind of struck me as just something that I kept in the back of my mind, that like, here is this kind of guy with Bill Cooper, for people who don't know, I mean, he's this overweight, you know, ex-military guy with a kind of like wearing a flannel shirt, lives in the middle of Arizona on top of a remote little town in Arizona, and yet everybody in Harlem is reading his book. So I was thinking, like, well, this is kind of how that happened. So that's when I began to get interested in the whole thing, and I found it to be a very long and interesting story.
Yeah, but, you know, it has a way of holding your interest, because he doesn't just beat one topic to death. He kind of ties a lot of things together.
Oh, he's a brilliant guy. I mean, you know, that's the thing that kept me going with the book, because he's really sharp. I mean, you know, not all so-called conspiracy theory guys, if you want to call them that, or truth tellers, or whatever you want to call them, are all made the same. Some are better than others. I mean, some of these guys are terrible. They don't have anything interesting to say. But Bill Cooper was a genius of the form, and just brilliant. And some of the stuff he came up with, I'm thinking, well, if it's not the truth, so it certainly sounds good to me. You know, it's way better than anything John McCloy or somebody from the permanent government would ever tell you. So, you know, these kind of things, they begin to take on a life of their own. And, you know, since truth, the nature of truth and even what this country is supposed to be about, as we've been seeing over the past couple of weeks and over months, I mean, it's totally up for grabs. So, you know, people don't know what's going on, really, in a lot of ways. So they're looking for little shreds of truth that might inform their opinion, so they don't feel as, I mean, it's nothing more anxiety producing than not knowing what's going on, you know, I mean, you know, not knowing who's in charge or what you're supposed to be doing. And it's very upsetting. And I think that, like, in the current situation with all the tech stuff, you know, for people my age, I don't know what's going on. The idea that I can go on a radio program like yours and say, follow me on Instagram, which is a Pale Horse writer book, by the way, I mean, it's like unthinkable to me. It's very strange. So, you know, because that's not how I grew up. And, you know, even as recently, a few years ago, I never heard of Instagram. So, you know, what can I tell you?
Now, a lot of his conspiracies, though, that he covers in his book, he's able to tie them all together, but I mean, how were they received at the time when the book first come out?
Well, that's a really good question. Actually, I've been thinking about that recently, because I mean, when you think about a guy like Bill Cooper, I mean, you think about who was he then, which is what you're asking about, and
yes.
Who is he now? You know, what does he mean now? You know, and I think that he means more now maybe than he did then, but you know, his ability to move from one, I think that basically what you're talking about, this big, gigantic one theory kind of thing, is that he's somebody who really sees everyday life as a kind of duke out between good and evil. So, you know, and that's, kind of a lot of people. A lot of people feel that way. I feel like that way increasingly more every day. So, you know, but the idea of like who's good and who's evil seems to switch around all the time, so you never really know. So it's and he was able to do that because I think he was looking for. There's only the thing that makes him seem consistent, and which really is consistent about him, and the reason why I could stay interested in him for all those years when I was writing that book, is that he's a seeker. He's an American seeker. He's not some bullshit artist or like a, I mean, he told a lot of stuff that wasn't true, but he's not, his first declension is not bullshit art. You know, he's not somebody who's just doing it for the money, even though he's always desperate for money. And he's kind of like an artist of this material. And, you know, his feeling was that there's something wrong. What is it? So that's his overriding concern. So that's why he's able to move. Well, most of those guys, you go and like, they got the flying saucer thing. They never come off flying saucers. That's what they think about. So Bill Cooper went through flying saucers. Then he went through secret societies. Then he was in the militia kind of thing. And all these different things. And he kept looking for the same thing, like the cause of evil in the universe. And, you know, he eventually came to the thing that most people do is that, like, you know, there's a bad news cat out there named Lucifer, and he's messing things up. And, you know, Cooper has one of his greatest speeches. He's in that Portersville presentation. You can get it online. I mean, he's just a fantastically emotional speaker. I mean, I look how, when he's on, he's great. He's not always on. So, you know, he says, like, you know, I spend my whole life looking for the devil. I've been everywhere looking for the devil, you know, and now I finally found him. And Cooper, and he looks at the audience, you know, it was in a VFW basement or something like that. I don't know where it was. And he slams his hand on his chest, and he goes, I finally found him. He's in there, you know, and which is like, you know, that's, I mean, you can read 100 levels of Kierkegaard and you won't get to that. I mean, you know, he's a very sharp guy. You know, he's very smart. And I found him to be sort of like a, you know, he's like an interesting, you know, I don't mean to say this in any way, shape, or form to look down on the guy because I think he's a genius of a sort. But, you know, he's like a philosophical soul. You know, he's like somebody, you don't need to go to college to understand what Bill Cooper's saying, and what he's saying is a very complicated and interesting thing. So I think a lot of people, you know, gravitate towards that.
What do you think of him as compared to someone like Alex Jones today? Because, well, like, you see, with Cooper, he had the military and he had some intelligence background, and yes, seemed to be more realistic. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, no, he's a far more authentic figure, you know? I mean, authenticity is very important in these kind of things. I mean, you know, he was there, you know, he was in Vietnam. He was in military intelligence. I don't know. I mean, I don't think you'd ever be able to prove how much he actually learned when he was there. Because I, you know, who knows what he saw and what he didn't see. But, you know, according to him, he saw everything. But that kind of thing, and also the fact that Jones went to school on Cooper, there's no doubt about that. He would be sitting there in his, growing up in his little frat boy house in Austin, Texas, and he'd listen to Bill Cooper all the time. You know, and Cooper was kind of his idol. So he kind of built on that whole thing, and I think that, I don't know, Alex Jones is not interesting to me. I don't think I've ever listened to a whole Alex Jones show because, you know, I don't want to buy all his products he's trying to sell me. I don't want to do all that kind of stuff. You know, I think it's really kind of outrageous. You know, I'm a First Amendment guy, man. I don't think I should be able to do anything to him, even Facebook or any of those people. But on the other hand, I mean, you know, there's a certain degree of human decency that you don't go around telling people whose children have just been murdered that didn't happen. You know, I mean, it's just not right. You know, I don't think Bill Cooper would ever do a thing like that. I mean, never in a million years. you know, because he's, you know, he had children, he cared about them, and, you know, he's just not that kind of person. I mean, I think he was a very difficult person to be around, but I think basically a decent person, you know. And I don't know what kind of personality Jones is, but I mean, some of the stuff he does, I mean, you got to raise your eyebrows, you know. So, I mean, there's a limit, you know. I mean, I'm all, you know, I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about that.
So back then, do you think that Bill Cooper was considered an actual threat to the government, which eventually led to his demise?
Well, it's a complicated issue in the sense that, you know that, I mean, did you happen to get a chance to look at the book?
Actually, I've read Pale Horse, but I have not had an opportunity to read yours.
Well, then you should get off, as soon as you get off the show, go out there and buy a copy immediately. But, I mean, Bill Cooper is like, you know, was the government afraid of Bill Cooper who was on a shortwave radio show? You know, he used to claim he had 10 million listeners, but I don't think it was anything close to that. But, you know, were they worried about him? I doubt it. You know, I mean, what they wanted him for was he didn't pay his taxes. You know, he didn't pay his taxes. So, and I spoke to the FBI agent who had the case, right? I mean, I actually did my research. I'm a Bill Cooper fan, supposed to tell you to do. I did my research, and I talked to the FBI guy, he said, well, you know, didn't know what to do about Bill Cooper because he was up on top of the hill, and, you know, he says that he's not coming down, he's going to shoot it out with people, and we've just gone through Ruby Ridge and Waco, and they, you know, screwed up royally in Waco. They murdered those people, you know. They weren't necessarily interested in doing that again, even for publicity, right? You know, PR reason. So they just, you know, they more or less said, well, let him stay up there if he wants to stay up there. The FBI was not involved in the shooting of Bill Cooper. I mean, regardless of what the people on the internet seem to believe, I mean, they just weren't there. And there's a 320-page, police report released by the Apache County Sheriff's Office and the Arizona Highway Patrol that described the entire murder. Unless it's all lies, you know, the FBI was nowhere around. You know, so you know what happened. I mean, you can read the book and people know what happened. It's not that secret. I mean, it was local people that, you know, he had gone down, and this is completely in dispute. I'm not saying that which story I necessarily believe, but I mean, he had local charges against him because he had threatened this guy who happened to be, who's currently the head of the Mormon stake in that part of the state. You know, it was like the wrong guy to mess with, sort of. And, you know, he's a big shot in the Mormon church. And, you know, after that, they had to do something. Mm-hmm. Because for the most part, everybody figured, like, well, Bill's just, you know, he's cool. He's up there on the mountain. He's not hurting nobody. So, you know, he chased people off his property all the time. But, you know, he hadn't hurt anybody. But now they've been in a situation where they had to do something. So, you know, they did what they did. And, you know, I think that it was like, there was any kinds of lawsuits about what happened that night, because the detective or the policeman who Cooper actually shot later sued the Apache County Sheriff's Office for putting him in a situation he never should have been in, because you know, he wasn't properly trained to be in a shootout in the middle of the night. I mean, so you know, those screw ups left and right, you know, like there always are.
Oh yeah, now. Jumping topics here, Cooper actually addressed the Oklahoma City bombing. Did he ever meet McVeigh?
Well, it's another one of those Bill Cooper things. I mean, yes, Bill Cooper, that was one of the main reasons I called the FBI guy to begin with, because the FBI interviewed Bill Cooper about Timothy McVeigh after the bombing. And, what they wanted to know was whether Cooper had actually met McVeigh. And Cooper told the FBI agent basically the same story that he told the Hour of the Time audience on several occasions, two at least I can remember right now. Two guys came to Bill Cooper's studio where he was doing the Hour of the Time broadcast at that time in St. John's, Arizona. And they wanted to talk to Bill Cooper because they were really big fans of Bill Cooper's. And there's no doubt that Timothy McVeigh and Michael Fortier and these kind of guys and whatever number of John Does you want to come up with, if people know what I'm talking about, they all listened to Bill Cooper. Like Terry Nichols, he listened to Bill Cooper. I mean, and Bill Cooper was, they loved Bill Cooper. And the idea was that these two guys had more or less driven an extra couple hundred miles to ask Bill Cooper's advice about what they should do. This is before the bombing. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys who was described by Cooper and also by the FBI agent as a taller, skinnier guy, didn't do very much talking. The other guy, a squatter guy with a black hat, did most of the talking. And he was asking, they're going to do something. And like,
hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You know, would Cooper support them? And Cooper said, well, you got to tell me what you're going to do before you ask me if I'm going to support you. And,
absolutely.
And they wouldn't say. So he said, well, you know, look, nice to you guys. I'm glad you like my show, but I can't really talk to you anymore. So the other guy jumped up and hadn't said anything. And he said that, if you get stopped in the road by a policeman, should you shoot him? And Cooper said, what do you mean? You know, he got stopped for speeding or something. So Cooper couldn't believe it. He said, why would you shoot somebody just if he stopped you for speeding? And he said, just in case. You know, so and Cooper said, look, just take your ticket and go on your way, right? And later, actually after the bombing, you know, if you're somebody who was a believer that Timothy McVeigh, you know, acted alone with the help of Terry Nichols, I mean, which is a whole different issue. You know, he was just driving away from the place. I mean, here's a guy who just killed 168 people, more, you know, allegedly, and he has no license plate on his car. So, I mean, if you want to get stopped by the police, I mean, I would say that was a good way to do it, you know. So he got stopped, and this guy, his story is not a secret. Everybody, you can read it anywhere. This guy who was a highway patrol guy, I think his name was Charlie Hanger, of all names. And he was going to more or less, he was just kind of fooling around. McVeigh, you know, had a loaded gun in his shoulder holster. And he could have shot that guy really easy and just gone on his way. 168, 169, what's the difference if that's what's happening? But he didn't do that. He kind of took Bill Cooper's advice. And he, you know, was real friendly to the cop. And the cop eventually figured out that, you know, it's a longer story than this, but they eventually figured out that's McVeigh, and that's how McVeigh got caught. So, you know, yes, I mean, and Cooper often said that McVeigh and this other guy, Michael Brescia, who was the shorter guy that I mentioned, had implants under their skin. And Michael Brescia told Cooper that, "The Army knows everything we're doing. They're kind of telling us what to do." And McVeigh said, and Brescia's thing was in the show, I think in the shoulder, but McVeigh's was in his ass. And he pulled down, this is Bill Cooper's story, I'm not making this up. He said that McVeigh pulled down his pants and offered that Cooper, if he wanted to steal the implant in his buttocks, he would be able to do that. And Cooper demurred on that. He wasn't really into it. So, I thought this stuff to be all fascinating, you know, but, you know, a lot of people that I know, see, I live in Brooklyn, people say, "Well, why are you wasting your time writing about this guy, Bill Cooper? He's obviously a nut." So I said, "Well, he may be a nut, but he's really an interesting nut. I mean, you know, and I think he's saying something that's interesting about the country and about the way people feel about the way things are, right now."
Yeah,
so a lot of ways.
As humorous as it sounds, I mean, this is a man that has got people driving hundreds of miles for him to look for an implant in their buttocks. I mean, say what you want.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, you know, I mean, it's, everybody each to his own about what they want to think about these stories. But these are the stories, you know. I mean, this is the story, whether you believe it or not. It's up to you.
Now, beyond his radio show, what would make McVeigh and his partner feel safe, you know, to come to him? Was it his words, or was there a sympathetic tone in Cooper's shows? I mean, why him? Now, some people would say that Cooper was almost a leader in the militia movement, but I don't necessarily buy that. Well, why?
I wouldn't buy it either, but from everything I found out, you know, his militia didn't have any people in it. I mean, he didn't have any membership in his militia. He was a second Continental Army of the Republic, SCAR, and there's never been, to my knowledge, it's never serviced how many people that are actually in this militia, you know. You know, I don't know. I mean, Bill Cooper's I hate to say this, but I mean, you know, you have to really pick through this stuff because, I think right now people believe that Cooper is some kind of fantastic prophet, and he certainly was prophetic. There's no doubt about it. He's a prophetic person. But, I mean, there was another side of him, which was sort of like, I call him the P.T. Barnum of dread, you know. you got this, and I think that's what makes him interesting because, you know, he's half a showman, half a prophet, you know, probably two-thirds or three-quarters of paranoid, but he's an American. He's 100% American, which is, you know, that's my concern. I'm interested in Americans. That's the kind of thing I like to write about and think about. I mean, what does it mean to be an American? And I think, as I said before, I think it's a little up for grabs now. And it's really too bad because you know, anybody who had taken any conspiracy 101 knows that divide and conquer is the first rule of the ruling class, you know. So how mm-hmm. can you fall for this crap, you know? You know, it's just, you know, am I supposed to care about if this guy Kavanaugh gets in or not? I mean, no. I mean, I care, obviously, but I mean, you know what I mean? It just seems like everybody's so quick to pick up sides on everything that nothing substantive ever comes out of any of these dialogues. Now, it's really too bad because a lot of people could benefit from just talking to somebody they think they disagree with.
Well, now you mentioned prophecy and prophetic. And did he not basically, for the most part, did he not prophesy that 9/11 was going to happen?
Well, he said, I would say yeah. I mean, you know, it's if you would ask me flat out to make a deposition about whether he predicted 9/11, I think there's a lot of different things, but he's, that what he said, the thing about Osama bin Laden and all that stuff like that, people always quote, that's as close as I ever saw. You know, that's as close as I ever saw for somebody predicting what was likely to happen. And then also, and the thing that's interesting, I try to make a point of this in my book, is that what if you just fast forward from the day that Cooper makes that prediction, which is June 28, 2001, then you go to September 11, 2001. Bill Cooper's on the radio the entire day. In fact, that's the day they were supposed to come get him. But they canceled the raid because it was 9/11 and nobody knew what to do. And plus he was on the radio. So if they came and tried to arrest him while he's on the radio, that's not going to work. So what Cooper said, which really was the thing to me, which was even more significant than predicting it in a way, because he was listening to he's playing the BBC feed of the events of that day. Right. And they have Richard Pearl. You know, people know who Richard Pearl is.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of those Bush guys who was he was a big backer of the SDI, this billion-dollar space force thing that they were trying to do. And you know, he's a neocon. He's the one partially behind the Iraq War and all that stuff like that. He was talking to him and the former prime minister of Israel, Ehud Barak. And they're talking about how this is maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, New York time, and it's already like 4 or 5 hours after the towers have fallen. And they're discussing about, well, you know, we know that it's Osama bin Laden, and you know, we think that, you know, we're gonna have to take him out, you know. And Cooper breaks in to the radio transport. He says, "How do they know? How do they know it's him?" You know, because, you know, the gimmick, what they're saying basically is this came out of nowhere. Nobody knew what was going to happen. You know, we're completely taken by surprise. And all the guys who flew the planes to the building are all dead. So how do they know? Who's telling them that Osama bin Laden isn't in charge? So then he kind of proved his own prediction that way. And I found that to be kind of like, you know, I don't think anybody else ever did. Like, you could go through a million of these idiot correspondents on the TV or radio, and nobody did that. I mean, he's the one that did it. So, you know, you got to give him his props for that.
He's got a good point. How did they know? Unless they've got information that they weren't sharing, which is, again, likely.
Well, I mean, you know, you're never going to find out. That's one thing. That's the one thing that's the red herring about conspiracy, the thing that makes it great and the thing that makes it kind of pointless. You're never going to find out. You know, you won't find out. You know, you can have a million opinions, but, you know, it's not likely that you're actually going to find out what really happened, because you've got really strong forces, including your own faulty memory and lack of cognition, that are keeping you from finding out exactly what happened. So, you know, but that's just humanity. That's just the way we're constructed, I think. And, you know, Bill Cooper, I mean, he just stood out there, and he didn't have any kind of, you know, he didn't have too many, he was a flamboyant guy. He liked to perform. And he didn't have any of these kind of inhibitions about saying what he thought was on his mind. So, you know, most people might think these stuff and not bother to say anything, but he was going to say something, and he did.
So
it was a lot of food for thought, especially now.
Well, didn't he also, Cooper, talk about the, wasn't his point about CNN being able to interview bin Laden just a few years before 9/11?
Yeah, no, that's his point. You know, if this guy was so dangerous and hidden, I mean, how does CNN get to interview him? You know, how does George Bush fly his entire family out of the country 3 hours after the thing happens? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that is so completely unexplained and just ignored. And the media guys, which, you know, I'm not going to knock the media like what people do, because I've been doing this for 45 years. It's my job. So, it's hard to figure out what happened. Like, they never answered why they flew Bin Laden's relatives out of the country after that. Why would they do that? If they thought wouldn't they be good witnesses if he was really the guy, you know? What Cooper called for, which was the right thing to call for, especially in light of the way they got rid of Osama bin Laden by killing him, you know, maybe, and throwing his body over the water, into the water, maybe, get the guy, bring him back, you know, put him in Washington, put him on trial, you know, like the way the Constitution says, you know, innocent until proven guilty, and put him on trial, I mean, you know, and get to the facts of the matter. So that's what Bill Cooper said. He didn't say go over there and kill him, you know. That's what the other guys wanted to do. So, you know, I mean, but he was pretty much by the book when it comes to constitutionality. I mean, he had a kind of, I wouldn't want him for a Supreme Court judge, but, you know, he was pretty straight down the line on this, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I have mixed feelings about a lot of the stuff he said, but, I mean, as a character, he's stellar.
And what about his death? How did that happen? He ended up shooting a deputy and he got shot himself?
Yeah, what happened was, a good way to find out the whole thing is to look at a documentary called The Hour of Our Time, which I think you can probably find online, which was made in cooperation with Doyle Shamley, who was Cooper's friend and confidant at the time. You know, basically, Cooper was up on top of the hill, and he's doing his radio broadcast. His wife has left him, you know, and he's by himself. His beloved children are gone. He's just him on top of this hill in the middle of nowhere. It's, like, very picturesque, to say the least, that he's sending out his radio broadcast. And are you guys Philip K. Dick fans at all? You know who that is?
I don't.
He's a sci-fi writer. He was a sci-fi writer.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so like, but he's up there. So like, you know, and he's sending out his broadcast, and he more or less is threatening these guys to come up there and try to take him alive or dead, whatever. And he's going to shoot them, and they're going to shoot him, and that's the way it goes. And so one night, they just decide this is the night they're going to try to take him down. And the way Cooper had, as I mentioned before, he had this habit that where he lives was sort of like the lover's lane of the town, Eager, Arizona. Like if you wanted to, like, you know, bang in the car, that's where you went, because it was his house, the old house on the hill. So, you know, he would go out sometimes and find these old, you know, condoms, you know, filled, you know, he didn't like that. So, I mean, who would? But, and there'd be a lot of noise and music and stuff like that. So the idea was, and he would always try to chase people away, sometimes at gunpoint, sometimes not. And he had a big dog, big scary dog. And what happened was he hears these people. But the cops' plan, which was seemed insane to me, was to go up there halfway up his hill, start to play a lot of loud music, have Cooper come out, and then when he came out, they'd nab him, because they didn't want this shooting. They didn't, you know, they were paranoid that he had all these guns and stuff like that inside of his house, which was not true. So, and there was a lot of cowboy stuff going on here. You know, you can imagine the situation where the people involved, you know, Bill Cooper's by far the most famous guy in the whole town. And here's a chance to take him down. You know, I mean, I don't think that, you know, the Apache County Sheriff sent 17 guys up there.
Well,
17 guys to get one guy. With what he only has one leg, but it's not like he's going to be running for cover, that kind of stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, is that really necessary? 17 officers for one man?
No, I wouldn't think so, but, you know, that's what happened. So, you know, I'm just trying looking for the facts here. You know, I'm a reporter. So this is what happened. I sent 17 guys up there. Maybe there were even more, you know. And they try to get Cooper out of the house, you know, get him because he previously had come out on foot, even though he has only one leg. So they thought that was a leg, and that was something that they could do, you know, was to give him an advantage. But this time he didn't do that. He came in his car, his truck. And he comes down the hill and says, "What are you guys doing here?" And they go, "Hey, why don't you get out and have a party with us and all kinds of stuff." And he looks at them, and Bill Cooper is a military guy. He's smart. He's also deeply paranoid. He's not going to go for this. This is the stupidest thing in the whole world. So he just gets back in his car and turns and tears back up the hill. And one of the deputies jumped on top of the running board of the car at the time. Cooper knocked him off. I mean, this is just like, you know, some kind of action movie. And then when he got up there, he was trying to get back into his house. And this is one of those moments where you can't really tell what happened, because he's trying to run back up into his house. The cops are under orders, more or less, to don't let him get back into the house because he's got all these weapons, you know, and then it's going to be Ruby Ridge or something like that all over again. Mm-hmm. We don't want that. So, you know, we got to stop him. And also there's the countervailing theory that Cooper wasn't really trying to get up into his house to shoot it out with the cops. He wanted to get on the radio and announce what was happening, which actually I kind of ascribe to that, actually, that he wanted to get up there and, like, you know, announce, and if he got killed, he'd be killed on the radio, which was like, you know, I don't know. What do you got? You guys are on the radio. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, given his reputation,
I mean, you know, if you
want to
go, you might as well go while you're on the air. You know, so. In any event, what happened was Cooper never gets in his front door. The two of the cops come from a different angle, surprise him sort of, and he's wearing a 38 in a kind of like, not really a ballistic expert, but it's like one of those holsters that isn't the stress shoulder holsters around. It's kind of around his waist, and he pulls out his 38 and he starts shooting. And he happened to hit one of these guys two times in the head, and the guy didn't die, which is kind of incredible. But the other guy, you know, then he just unloaded, and that was the end of Bill Cooper. And the thing that is very kind of incredible and far more interesting than his prediction of the 9/11 thing, I think, is that Bill Cooper would periodically say on the air, and you can find it, it's not hard to find, "They're going to come up here and shoot me on my front doorstep at midnight." You know, and they came up there and they shot him on his front doorstep. That's where his head landed. And it was like maybe 10 minutes after midnight, so he was off by maybe 10 minutes, but not much, you know? And that's the real prediction. I mean, to be predict the moment, the place, and moment of your own death, that's pretty, I think that's pretty spooky. What do you think?
Yeah.
You know, I kind of agree with him. You know, if this was happening to me, I would want it to be on air too. I mean,
it's an interesting idea.
You think this Zapruder film is something? Wait till you get this audio. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't know what was going through his mind, but that sounds good to me. You know, I mean, not good, but I mean, it sounds believable. Knowing what I know about Bill Cooper,
do you think that kind of fueled the conspiracy surrounding Bill Cooper? Though, was the fact that, you know, that this happened and it happened in this way? I mean, 17 deputies.
Absolutely. Well, that's his main legend. He predicts 9/11. Then they kill him 6 weeks after 9/11. That's the core of the Bill Cooper. I mean, aside from all the other stuff, the Hold the Pale Horse is pretty much of like a textbook for a lot of stuff. And all the stuff that he did on the radio, I mean, that Mystery Babylon stuff is fantastic, I think. To me, it's not exactly scholarship, but it's for an autodidactic guy who's just doing all his own research, that was pretty great. And I'm a big fan of the opening part, which I don't know if you know, but I mean, he wanted to start at the beginning. Mystery Babylon is telling the history of this evil that I'm talking about, back to the beginning of consciousness. That's Cooper was like, he was nothing if not a completist. If you're reading a comic book, a Superman comic book, the people that like the origin stories, those ones, how did this really begin? That part, the prequels, he was into that for sure. And he wanted to, he more or less rewrote the book of Genesis, the Garden of Eden book, that whole story by claiming that it was the metaphor for the Garden of Eden was in Stanley Kubrick's movie 2001. You know that film?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. So what Cooper said, which I thought was kind of brilliant, was that when the monkeys touch the monolith, that's when they get consciousness. That's when they get smart. That's when they become human beings. And there's something evil about that. That the monolith is an evil object. It's kind of like, he described it as a kind of like, Freemason kind of symbol or something like that. And after that, the intellect of man was always tainted with the devil, which is basically what it says in the Bible, because they're not supposed to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But the fact that Cooper could use the same idea and update it to 1968, which is when that movie was made, which was the same year that he was in Vietnam getting shot at, that's like, poetry to me. I mean, it's sort of like, special. Nobody does that kind of stuff. And he doesn't get any credit, because he's supposedly a conspiracy theorist.
Wow. Pretty amazing. Now, your book, Pale Horse Rider, the name is, you've sort of intended it as the Four Horsemen, the fourth horse?
Well, he's, the meaning to me is that he's the rider of the pale horse. And it's like sort of half a Paul Revere horse and half a pale horse. He's trying to wake people up, but he's also riding towards his own death. I mean, that's, that's just some poetic license that I took for that title. But I like the way it sounds. So.
Yeah. Wow.
So, that's what you want in the title.
Catchy.
Now we'll have your book up on our website, Pale Horse Rider. And it's about William Cooper, The Rise of Conspiracy and the Fall of Trust in America. And Mark Jacobson's been our guest, and we really appreciate you talking about the book. I just bought the audio book just now, so thank you for being on.
Great. Did you hear that, everybody? Go out there and do the same thing.
That's right.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.